Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode is Al Linder. Now, Al needs no introduction. He is probably the best to ever do it that's still out there doing it. Al is he is the man, and he is getting after the fish as much as he ever has. And this conversation, we cover a lot of things. I'm not even going to get into it very much. Al Linder is the guest. We don't need an intro for this. Let's get right to it. Al Linder, all things fishing. This episode is brought to you by Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. And podcasting, you know, having a conversation with no video camera around, like, you know, and we can kind of talk about whatever we want for as long as we want. For you and all the media content that's out there, do you enjoy the podcasting? Is that something that you guys would start up?
You know, we naturally had talked about it here a number of times, and myself, I've been, you know, my whole life has been spent in the fishing industry. The only thing that I haven't done in the fishing and yet windows of time that I haven't, I served 2 years in the military when the draft was on and in Vietnam was on. So I worked 2 years for Uncle Sam, and all the rest of my life, I paid my bills fishing. Yeah. You know, I was fortunate enough to know when I was a very young kid, 12, 13 years old, I knew I was going to make a living fishing. There was no question. I didn't know how. But I knew. I started a tackle company as a kid. I got into business. You know, I actually sold it. And when I was in high school, my brother and I, third year of high school, I started a tackle company in Chicago, and it was called Linder Manufacturing. We'd made spinner baits and jigs and inline spinners and crappie jigs. Yeah, you know, a jig called a pinky jig, and when my brother sold them all between these, just to pay for our fishing habit in between Chicago and Milwaukee, all the bait shops, there was no big box stores. You didn't have a Bass Pro Shops or Shields or Cabela's. They were non-existent then. Oh, you had mom and pop tackle stores, and you get into rural areas, then they were bait shops tied into them. Yeah, you know. So my brother would take these baits, sell them again to pay for our fishing habit. And this thing grew a little bit. We had an offer to buy it out. And when I graduated from high school, I mean, 2 years, I had my third and fourth year in high school. I had like six kids working in the basement of my parents' house with me, you know, pouring jigs, ripping, tying stuff up. And Ron would take them and go peddle them. And we had an offer to buy the business, the molds and everything. And I sold it. Yeah, and Ron sold. I graduated from high school, went to Hayward, Wisconsin to be a fishing guide. You know, that's part of my dream to be fishing. I was 20, at that time, 18 years old. I never went to college. Yeah, you know, I wanted to fish. That's all I ever dreamed about. That's all I ever cared about. You know, and one thing I knew, people are some of my heroes at that point in time were fishing guides in the Hayward area. Yeah, you know, they were like legends on a local level. Yeah, you know, and I thought, man, this is so great, and people pay you to go fish. What a way to make a living. So I thought, you know, I actually manufactured tackle and started guiding. You know, that was the beginning of my career. And then, you know, after doing a stint in the Army, and that Ron and I had looked for a place to call home, and we looked through Wisconsin, Minnesota. We wanted to buy a bait shop. I have a bait shop, a guide service, 4 or 5 cabins, you know, and live happily ever after. Yeah. You know, that was our dream. And so we looked through Wisconsin, Minnesota, wandered into Wisconsin, fell in love with the Brainerd area because of all the lakes here. You know, and through the adventure of life, you know, we started a guide and helped organize the Nisswa Guides League with Marv Kep and the guys out of Nisswa. That Guides League is still in business today. You know, during that era of time, we actually started the Lindy rig and got approached. The Lindy rig started to grow like wildfire. You know, the guides would all promote it, and it was just a hook, line, sinker, but the sinker was the unique part about it. And it built into a business, and Rayovac Corporation, after 7 years, came knocking on our door to buy it. You know, they said, we want to, you know, enter into the leisure fields. But hunting, fishing stuff would be a good a purchase for us for the Rayovac Corporation. So 6 months after that, we started talking. We sold them the business. And it was during that period of time at Lindy Tackle that I started freelance writing for one of the early magazines that molded. It was called Fishing News before it morphed into Fishing Facts magazine. It was Fishing News, a tabloid out of Milwaukee. And I started to write for that. We met Ron and I met Bill Binkelman, who started this, and had a taste of writing. Started to promote selling tackle, peddling tackle to bait shops, and taking buyers out on the water and local media out on the water, and started a fishing show. Had the first taste of fishing, a fishing show, and fell in love with the fishing show business. So I said, Ron and I said, doing television fishing shows, the media and the business is a lot more exciting than making fishing tackle, pouring sinkers and lead-headed jigs. It's something new every day. So, we had a 2-year work contract with Rayovac, and after that was done, we said, we're going to go start a fishing magazine, and we're going to start a television fishing show and do all this. Knew nothing about publishing, had no idea of anything about publishing, but the idea for In Fisherman was born. And we started that, and Lindy came on board with us. Pure Fishner, which was Berkeley at the time, they were one of our sponsors. Lund Boat jumped on with us, and I've been with them ever since, that time. And we built In Fisherman over the years. It took 25 years of my life. And most of my life has been spent in the industry, the fishing industry. The majority of my life has been spent in the media end of it. And heavy emphasis on television. We did tournaments. We did books, radio. At one point, we had 600 radio shows playing 6 days a week on 600 markets. Tournaments, walleye tournament tour. We were into every aspect of media. And it grew, like I said, it was 25 years of my life. The earlier part of that transition from Lindy Tackle Company sales into In Fisherman, tournament fishing was starting. And Ray Scott, I got back from Vietnam. I'll backtrack a little bit there. I got an invite to fish the second BASS tournament there ever was on Smith Lake in Alabama. Now, you ask, how would Ray Scott know who I was? There was a tournament tour prior to that. A guy named High Preskin had what he called the World Series of Sport Fishing. And he had regional tournaments, regional state tournaments. I happened to win an upper Midwest regional tournament, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota. And then I won that event. Scott bought the mailing list from High Preskin of people that like to fish tournaments. And that's how how he got a hold of me. I was on that, and I won that division, and I was on a mailing list, and I had an opportunity to go fish that tournament. So I fished that second bass tournament. It was such an eye-opener to me. I says, holy mackerel, this thing is fun, really fun. So I started tournament fishing in between doing Lindy Tackle Company promoting our product during that window of time, leading into the years of In Fisherman being built. I fished lots of bass tournaments. I fished three classics, won two events. And I was the only one from up north ever down there doing this. And it was a learning curve, I got to the point where the last classic that I fished, well, it was Currituck Sound. And it was interesting. It was tidewater. And at this point, we had already sold Lindy Tackle Company. In Fisherman was being birthed. The magazine was up and going. This was 1977. And I finished that tournament. I was driving back with my wife. And I had no idea of how fish moved in tidewater. And the last day of practice, I remember we were in this bay, and there's a duck blind in the middle of the bay, and a big massive weed bed around it. One side of it, Roland Martin was fishing. I was fishing on this side, and we were both catching fish. Yeah, you know, I said, well, this is a good deal. I've come here open on this side. Imagine Roland might open on the other side. Well, I got there that morning. Roland wasn't there. There was no water left there at all.
Oh,
the
duck
line was almost. I said, wow. You know, so that was, you know, that was my last classic. I came back from that tournament driving back with my wife, and I said, honey, I got to make some decisions. I love this tournament fishing. I'm good at it. This is a brand new thing. Yeah, you know, we can make a living in this. I know I'm really good at this thing, and I love it. You know, or I got to stay in the media end of the business and take this in fisherman thing and build it. You know, the television show is up. We started a television show. The magazine is starting to go. I fished this tournament mechanically and not with my heart. I said, I know what it is to win. I had the taste of winning. I loved the competition. I had the fire in the belly. I could not get in my mind. I was preoccupied with some other television shoots and some other things. And I said, I can't split my interests between tournament and the television business. I can't do them both. Yeah, you know, things are happening. We got to make a decision. So obviously, I had the right decision. You know, I went with In Fisherman. Like I said, it took 25 years of my life.
Yeah.
You know, but that earlier stage of tournament fishing molded. It really showed me. It was eye opening to me. Many of us that fished that thing. Incidentally, by the way, that when I retired, the year that I retired, and made the decision to retire, Bill Dance retired for the same reason his television show was starting to build. He retired, I retired. There was a guy named Billy Westmoreland from Tennessee. He retired. He started a television show in the Kentucky, Arkansas, Missouri area. And Johnny Morris, who started Bass Pro Shop, he was fishing some of those early tournaments, and Bass Pro Shop was just getting off the ground. All four of us pulled out of the tournament business, the main bass tournament business at that same year. Yeah, you know, and went into our individual fields. Yeah, but it was during those times and over the years that, you know, I'm friends with all Jimmy Houston, Roland Martin, Bill Dance, Hank Parker, the old guard, the real old guard. They had all fish tournaments that we fished against each other and over the years have filmed in each other's boats. You know, they came up here, I went down there. But the industry, people don't realize that the sport fishing industry is a small community of people. A lot of, on the outside, they think this is a big, giant business. It is not. It is a small business, and everybody knows each other.
I kind of want to keep going down this road, you know, talking about history. I think that's really the manifestation of this conversation. You've been in the industry, you know, reflecting on these things. You've seen things come and go. And I kind of want that to be the direction of this conversation of, like, there's a lot of things in this industry, you know, lures, presentations, concepts, fishing strategy that, you know, really withstands the test of time and has been here since way back. But also, you put out some media here recently. I just want to touch on this early in this conversation. You put some media out recently and made some comments about, you know, this day and age with, you know, the modern day angler and the advancements in technology, there are areas of really pressured fish where, you know, the evolution is happening really, really fast, especially when we're talking like lures and techniques and stuff like that. So anyways, I'm just kind of getting my cards on the table there, but getting into, you know, back, you know, competing against Roland Martin, Jimmy Houston, those guys, I was watching something recently, like I think BASS put it out digitally. I watched it on YouTube. It was like a documentary with Roland and Jimmy, they were talking about, and this blew my mind because I'm, you know, I'm almost 40 years old. I guess I'm just saying that, but I haven't been in the industry long enough to even realize this. I didn't even understand this was a thing. It's something you can speak on. Is like, you know, Roland came around and did a lot as it pertains to like pattern fishing. Prior to that, high level anglers, all these guys were fishing the highest level tournaments at the time. They were, you know, guides, you know, people in the industry that were creating media and whatever as this industry was building up. And prior to that, You know, pattern fishing as we know it today wasn't even a thing. That blew my mind watching Jimmy and Roland talk about that. How would you speak to that? You know, you're talking about your time way back when, looking at the evolution of the industry and just some of the more impactful stages, you know, not just the advancements of technology, but just the advancements of strategy and ideas and just sort of like those intangible things. How would you kind of speak to that in your own career, just with your own, you know, what you witnessed with your own eyes?
Well, going back to those early stages of tournament fishing, while it was being molded and shaped, media, you know, television really took it to another level. It really took it. It just skyrocketed everything. But in those old days, everybody had a flasher unit. That's what you had on your boat for a depth finder. You had a flasher. And most people, lots of people, didn't even own flashers at that time. They didn't. All of these guys were ahead of the average angler because they understood a little bit of the term structure fishing, which Buck Perry formulated. Buck Perry from North Carolina termed the term structure fishing. And these guys that were avid anglers, bits and pieces of us in different parts of the country, became familiar with Buck Perry's structure fishing concepts. So we had that understanding. And Carl Lawrence came out with the first depth finders of any quality. And we all had those first depth finders. So we were right on the cutting edge. And all of these guys had the same thing, even though we lived in different parts of the country. Each one of us had that same experience. Nobody else, way ahead of our time. But that's how, what kind of united everybody together. We understood depth finder. Looking at this depth finder, you're able to erase the surface of the lake and see what it was. Mind-boggling. It was such a major, major breakthrough. And you understood Perry's concept of structure fishing, how fish make migrational, seasonal movements. All these things started to come into play and were slowly birthed. When we started in fishermen, some of our biggest contributions, one of the things was what we termed the formula for fishing success, which was simply fish location presentation equals success in its simplest terms. And it's understanding the basic nature of the fish you're fishing for. You know, simple things like a spotted bass is not a smallmouth bass. A smallmouth bass is not a largemouth bass. Yeah, you know, a sauger isn't a walleye. A northern pike isn't a muskie. A bluegill isn't a crappie. Each species of fish has its own basic nature. It spawns at certain times. It has favorite food sources. It likes certain kind of environmental areas of the lake. They're distinctly different. And to be a good angler, you need to understand the simplicity of the basic nature of the fish. You just don't go fishing. I'm going fishing. What are you going fishing? Well, I don't know. I hope to get a bite. You can, once you understand the nature of the fish, you start fine-tuning that fish. Yeah, you know, it's separate. You understand how they function based on local weather and water conditions. Then the location, the L factor is the environment they live in, the lake, river, reservoir, pits, ponds. Some fish like cover, like largemouth bass. Some fish don't like cover and are constantly moving, like a walleye. They suspend a lot. It's the nature of the fish, the environment. Is there cover in there? Is the water stained? What did the wind do? How did it impact the forage? All these things that cycle that make the fish do what they do. Then the other element, we had said the presentation factor. You found the fish. You know how they're functioning in your favorite body of water. Now you got to pick a lure or a bait that catches those fish in that environment. And when you put all of those together, you got a great day on the water. If you don't start to think in those terms, it's there. You don't realize it, every good day you ever had on the water, those three elements came into play. They were always there. If you think through it, you may never have thought of that, but you did it instinctively. You instinctively learned it. But we just took it and put it into a formula. And guys started to think different when they looked at it. And the instincts that were there, you just did it from time on the water, talking to other anglers. Nothing beats time on the water.
Devil's Lake, North Dakota is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. We talk about the fishing all the time on this show, but to find out what the lake and the community has to offer, which is way more than we ever talk about on this show, you can head to devilslakend.com and get all that. We're talking about the lodging and restaurant options and just the lay of the land and everything going on in the community. There's all kinds of stuff all summer long going on in and around the community of Devil's Lake. Also, our favorite, the fishing tab. It's going to give you real-time fishing reports, directions to fish cleaning stations and boat landings and shore fishing piers, which are awesome, by the way. Also, it's going to give you a list of options for boat rentals or guide services and bait shops. Everything that you need to plan your next adventure in Devil's Lake is at devilslakend.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Yeah, that point right there. I think that is one of the truest, again, correct me if I'm wrong, your own perspective on this is what I'm asking, but like there's no truer a sentence in all of fishing as it pertains to being on the journey of, getting better at fishing or reaching new, skill levels in fishing, but nothing can replace time on the water. Like we have all these conversations now about like e-scouting or all this information you can get online or all the printed information and all the content you can consume. But none of those things add, I think, to, they kind of add to the pile, but nothing could ever possibly replace, quality time on the water for any kind of intuitive angler. I think that's, my point, being I like identifying some of these concepts or just some of these sort of punchlines, if you will, that are withstanding the test of time, things that, were developed way back when, things that you learned, things you've seen come into the industry, concepts, technology that have helped us. But a lot of that stuff just sort of adds to the experience or adds to our abilities. But there's some things that you just cannot replace, right? Like time on the water.
And instinct. There are some people, like in fishing, that are naturals, just like there is in any sport. They catch on, they understand it, they grasp it instantly. They have the right instinct. It's not laborsome for them. It just flows for them. Others, the top anglers that I know at every level have great instincts on water. Every one of them does. They know the basics. They know these weather conditions make this fish do this in this environment. And then they can quickly, their ability to process or eliminate unproductive water fast is one of the keys to the success. And that's instinct. That's time in the water. How you eliminate water really quick. In many cases, today's day and age, you could do that. Because of social media, there's stuff you could check, local bites, local weather, water conditions, everything. But before you put your boat in water, luck has nothing to do with this. We used to say you got lucky, you're lucky, you're lucky. And the only difference is luck is a big fish is luck, but consistently catching fish is not luck.
Yeah.
That's skill. Big fish becomes luck in a lot of elements. No question about that. And for sure. But those skill levels are just developed over time and water and fine tuning, where you could process everything instinctively. Over the years, you'll find this interesting. Being in the media business, when we had in Fishermen and Angling Edge today at all, when you talk to fishermen, when we'd have to write an article on somebody after they won a tournament, there's a lot of people, they just don't, a lot of really good anglers. The majority of good anglers, a lot of them trying to get that information, that nugget of information out of them. They don't know what they know. And I'm going to say that again. They don't know what they know. You would ask them the question and you got a kind of a pap answer. So you had to get into the boat with them and fish with them and see how they acted and why they did this. They did everything so instinctively, learned over time to do this, this, or this. And then pretty soon you were able to understand why they're so good at what they do. They don't know it when you talk to them. They just do it.
Yeah. I heard this, we're pretty walleye centric on here, but I love consuming like all types of fishing. I like watching YouTube from, guys in Europe. I'm always consuming bass content. I don't fish them as often as I do like walleyes, especially in open water, but I just love it. I think there's a high level of, I guess any good, well thought out opinion from any good angler that has all that time on the water is just a good thing to consume. Like I probably pull something from it. I think I was listening to one of the top guys bass fishing right now, Edwin Evers, I think he was the one. Anyways, he puts out some great stuff, and he, just sort of made a point that like when it comes down to good tournament angler, consistent tournament angling, it's finding fish. Like that sounds so simple, but finding fish fast.
Yeah. Biting fish. Biting fish. Finding the most aggressive fish in the system. Not all the fish in the lake are doing the same thing at the same time. You want to find the most aggressive fish, the biters.
And be efficient at doing that, right? Like being efficient at finding the right fish. Like, and it was such a, again, some of these statements just seem so obvious. But when you say it out loud, it's real humbling. And I think as anglers, a lot of us probably need to be humbled to grow. Even if we're not a tournament angler, we fish the same, home body of water all the time, and we do things, we have a few successful days a year, and we kind of tell ourselves that we got this lake dialed in. And then a tournament comes to town, and a bunch of anglers that have never set foot on that lake show up, and they blow it away.
They don't get one of the killers in fishing is a preconceived notion.
Yeah.
It'll kill you on the bite.
Yeah. And so I was just thinking that, like, for so many of us, even if somebody handed me all the best waypoints on whatever, just like pick a big lake in like Devil's Lake out here in the Dakotas or whatever. Like if somebody handed me a bunch of waypoints that had all the biggest fish on them last week, and they gave me all the best equipment. They gave me all the best equipment in the industry, and they had everything. And I've done some fishing, so I kind of know how to use all of this stuff, at least like how the brochure reads. And I had that whole scenario. These tournament anglers are the best example, I guess, in my mind. But just these higher level guys that I love looking up to, they could show up with just a select, like if you crippled them with a smaller boat, a smaller engine, half of their electronics and half of their tackle, they're still going to blow me out of the water.
Absolutely.
They're going to find the fish for that day. I'm going off of last week's waypoints. Like, I don't know how to find fish. If you can't figure out, if you're not focusing your efforts on some of that stuff. And I feel like that is just one of those topics that has always been. It's something that it could never get tired or old. And as anglers, I think we definitely at times divert, and we love to talk about the technology. We love to talk about the lures and the rods and the reels and things we can buy, because there's a whole nother psychology to that. But, I don't know. I love the storytelling, and I love your perspective on that, because you've done it. You've seen it. You're a passionate angler first. But then you have the experience in the media where it kind of all wraps itself up. I just really enjoy that. And anything else that comes in your mind, I want to keep talking about it. But I do want to, as we go on in this conversation, talk about something that you mentioned in that, I mentioned that YouTube video, or I watched that YouTube video of you here like a month ago, where you mentioned how, this day and age, in comparison to past, or in comparison to, say, 30 years ago, we're experiencing something kind of unprecedented now on some of these pressured bodies of water. I like using walleyes as an example, and look across the Midwest at some of these capital walleye fisheries that get a ton of fishing pressure year round. All this technology out there nowadays, we're so like pattern specific, and you see all these trends and all these fads with like lures and presentations and specific scenarios, and these fish are catching on to this stuff. And so the evolution of catching fish in certain scenarios in certain lakes is really moving fast. Lures can come and go, or presentations, information revolving around those specific scenarios. It's like it was the most popular, moneymaker in the media 2 years ago, and now it's a dead subject. Like, you know, wrap that up a little bit for me. Elaborate a little bit on that, what you've seen in your career. I just kind of want to keep the conversation going like that.
Well, and not to, I'll just do a quick touch on walleyes. A lot of your people are walleye anglers. In the earlier days of tournament walleye fishing, when you got out, what were the main baits when we all started this stuff? You were fishing a jig and a minnow. You were fishing a bottom bouncer and a spinner, or a bottom bouncer and a piece of meat on it, and or a slip rig like a Lindy rig with a piece of live bait. At night, you'd be pulling a minnow bait like a Rapala at certain times of the year for the night bite, and a bait like a shad wrap was a mainstay of a ship shaped like that flatline trolls, eventually led up to board lines and lead corn, all of that fine-tuned as time went on. But you had those handful of baits. Yeah, that was what everybody used. And as time went on, pretty soon people learned the aspect of triggering a fish with crazy erratic actions. The birth of a jigging wrap as an example. Yeah, you know, something really erratic. And pretty soon, soft plastic baits. Years ago, who would think soft plastic would replace live bait? It took a long time for the industry to accept that as a fact, because the walleye mind is so live bait oriented. But we're seeing major breakthroughs in that. Some of the biggest names in the tournament, what I'll use Hoyer as an example,
yeah,
who brought bass fishing techniques into the walleye world and is kicking everybody's butt with it. You know, he's out of the box with this stuff. And these fish do get, I always, but you know, people, the DNI would say, you're crazy. I said, there's a conditioning effect. These fish do get conditioned. Yeah, you know, you catch and release them so many times, they keep getting a little bit smarter, you know, and over time, people in DNRs and controlled environments have said it's absolutely true, that there is a learning system from them fish. They learn, and they learn by watching other fish get caught, and that this is not a smart thing to do. But there is so much intelligent pressure today. Little things, what you're seeing today, small things make the biggest difference than you've ever thought before. Color changes. Before, color was not a big thing. You had a handful. And I used to say color was so far down in my perspective, you know, but over time, because of fishing pressure, water clarity from zebra mussels, the environment's changed. It is amazing how much color comes into play now. We're talking walleyes, but we're fishing colors today that as far back as 10 years ago, you would look at these colors and say, no fish would ever bite that. No fish would ever bite. You look at musky lures. I'll use the musky. You walk in a musky store today, and years ago it was a black bucktail with either a silver blade or a bronze blade. And a black bucktail, real versatile, you had a black and a white bucktail.
Yeah.
Now you go in there, the colors look like Christmas tree ornaments. Yeah, you know, it's staggering. Color has become so important, and you wouldn't think it would make a difference in water clarity. Great Lakes salmon fishermen have seen that for years.
Yeah.
Where they seen the trends, these fish would get programmed out of Great Lakes. They'd have a color in a spoon or a hard bait that would go for 2 years or hotter than a pistol, all of a sudden it burns out. Yeah, you know, and we're seeing that in the walleye world. We're seeing it in the bass world. These fish are just because of intelligent fishing pressure, catch and release, all of these factors, the conditioning factor, these fish are adapting. You're seeing it in this crazy world called forward-facing sonar today. You're seeing when it first came on the scene, you keep your transducer tuned on that fish. You used to be able to get close to them before. Now that beam hits them 30, 40 feet out.
Yep.
They know you're there and they're moving. They know you're there. Yeah, you know, years ago, before zebra mussels got in these lakes, when you had water clarity, not a lot of pressure, you used to be able to pull over a school. You'd run over them with 2D sonar, and you see the school of fish, let's say it's 100 yards long, a bunch of fish, and they're all 18 to 22 foot of water. You put a bottom bouncer on it and a spinner, and you go fishing for 2-3 hours. Then, you know, and if you're a guide, you fill out all 3 people and you go home. You can't do that anymore. You make 2-3 passes, or you make one pass over the fish, and pretty soon they're not on your depth finder anymore. They're gone. They know you're there. They're gone. The fish are gone. you get one quick pass. You know, they're adapting. You're adapting to forward-facing sonar. They instinctively know how to survive in the environment they live in, and they're constantly making these changes. And the fishermen today, we have to learn to keep, and it's little things. I keep coming back to color because you see such crazy colors today for every kind of fish that swims that we would have never dreamed we'd be fishing before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can totally, wrap my head around that where, if you just look at the last 10 to 15 years in fishing, the zebra mussels and all the clear water, you're talking about a time. And I think that's great perspective. And it kind of gives context or sort of texture to this conversation of like, how come we have to retire some of our philosophy from, say, 30 years ago to now as well? We're fishing totally different ecosystem in a lot of cases. It's not the same lake.
Huge difference. Big difference.
Yeah. And so maybe that's kind of how a guy describes, I guess, because this is kind of one of my other questions I want to ask you while we have, plenty of time to address it. Like, how do you sort of explain or how do you balance in your own mind that there are sort of lures and profiles that have been around forever that we still use, like floating Rapalas or,
There's some mainstays here. There's some mainstays.
Yeah. How do we... how do we sort of describe that, or how do we sort of wrap our head around the fact that in some of these, I guess I have my own theories, but like in some scenarios, like some of these things just come and go so quick. And now we've got a tackle box full of these lures that, we got to go find another use for. And how come, I can go into my dad's old tackle box that, stuff that's 25, 35 years old, and there's still a few good ones. I just got to change the hooks. Like, how would you, or maybe there's some specific stories, that you could think of, or maybe some, just some specific scenarios or some specific lures that you just sort of think fondly of that we could just sort of maybe describe some of that, anything like that?
I'll go off one of the all-time greatest hard baits ever made, and there's been more of them than any hard bait. It's the shad wrap, the Rapala shad wrap. Across the world, there's been no other hard bait that has sold so many baits for all kinds of fish all over the world, and is still, when it comes to shape, it's one of the number one selling baits out there and for all kinds of fish. And the only thing you are seeing that is considerably different, and we just talked about it earlier, is the color combinations. Yep. Again, it used to be all natural colors were the thing to go. Make it look like a shiner. Make it look like a perch. My God, we see things out there now. You go wall to wall. You go into Shields. You go into your local bait shop and sporting goods store, and you look at the wall to wall equipment. Look at the colors. It is every year they're coming out with more colors, and you're reading it in the tournament results. These guys are seeing you're back to color. For some reason, color is really trending. It's moved kind of into the forefront in the last 15 years. But where it was nowhere as important now, but now it is. And I think it's just an adjustment. These colors get hot. Everybody uses one color on when the tournament is won on three different colors. Everybody buys that color. They fish the heck out of it for 2 years and it burns. The fish get burned out on it. It's real. It happens.
Yeah.
The thing is size. We've had a tremendous move in the last 10 years to everything downsize, smaller, finesse, lighter lines. And it's true. You're adjusting to the mood of the fish. The more they get caught, the more finessing to get. And then you see a lot of the normal presentations, you're either going very big or very small now. And keeping tabs on this stuff, the fish will tell you, but they're constantly adapting. And these trends, I've been in the business all my life, and I get excited about the new year, seeing the new companies, the new lures, the new colors, the new things. And you watch media, and you watch fishing reports, and pretty soon you start to see a little trend that'll happen here or there. And it's something that the fish haven't seen before. And I'll jump on it right away, because I know it's important. It's important. And so I pay attention to all this stuff. That old cliche, is all this stuff, all these colors, they're made to catch fishermen and not fish. That isn't the case. That is not true. That isn't true. Color, shape, vibration, sound. The smiley blades and fed a hard-bladed spinners of where you can fish so much slower versus speeds where a hard spinner you can move much faster. The smiley blade is moved to be crawling along what a crawler on. All of these adaptations have come, and fishermen are they're genius at this. And especially tournament anglers that have been around a long time. They're constantly looking, how do I one-up something? Everybody's doing this. How can I jig when everybody else is jogging? Where do you know, what is the difference? And that difference usually is something happened that gives them the win. Yeah, you know, they're doing something slightly different. And you got to keep an open mind in this. Things are changing all the time. The sport is driven by change. And the environment, these fish, they are conditioned. I believe that, always have believed that. And it's getting more confirmed now than ever before, where we have all kind of, you know, technology to tell us that they're doing this.
Something like this, I think it sort of triggers so many of the best conversations it could ever have. Like people listening to this, like, you know, they can be sitting anywhere in any circumstance and take a lot away from, because this is the big picture perspective. It doesn't matter what species you're after. It doesn't matter. But if you can just look objectively at the fishing opportunities, you know, that you have, you know, next, and just focus on being good at finding fish. And you know, there can be pressured fish. Some of these lakes, you know, a lot of the pressured fish are in the community spots. There's always an alternative pattern. There's probably there's unpressured fish on basically every lake or every example.
Everywhere. Every body of water. Yep.
There's going to be fish, because they're not all doing the same thing. So let that be a motivator, right?
Right.
Just all these things. And so if you listen to these conversations, you know, for me, I try to be objective. I try not to get too emotional or too into my own rut. And I let it kind of motivate me to, you know, where's the next lowest hanging fruit in terms of a skill or something that I've been overlooking as an angler, something that I've been maybe taking for granted or assuming too much, some of my weaknesses. I like working on my weaknesses. I think that, you know, but, and being able to articulate some of the things that maybe some of us are naturally good at, like you said, you know, some of these tournament anglers today, they're so intuitive, they're so instinctive that they might have a hard time explaining how they find fish. And that's like the hardest thing for other people. Or, you know, the next angler or somebody that's asking that question, it's like, you know, the biggest barrier for me to have a good day on the water is that I can't, you know, I just don't have the instinct to go out and find fish. So it's a learned behavior. It's something that I have to, you know, work really, really hard at. And so sometimes, you know, I find those guys that have been around forever, and, you know, one species like walleyes might be sort of the thing. You know, you grew up on it, you're kind of naturally good at it, but, you know, at some point in time in your career, you went after smallmouth, and it became a new challenge, and you had to learn some of these things all over again. And that really advances that angler by challenging themselves. Like, and you know, I love hearing those stories. I think there's so much that you can learn from, take away from. I think it describes the industry really well. I like it.
One thing that I've shared, I've done this on television numerous times and at, you know, seminars, but people say, what can I do to be a better fisherman? And I say, you want to advance, don't keep going to the same water you always fish where that you know they're doing the same, that this is going to be a spinner bite, this is going to be a jig bite, this is going to be a plug bite, this is going to be a crawler bite. Get out of your comfort zone, go to a body of water you have never fished before, and fish a presentation that you have never fished before. Make it a habit every year to do that, and it's going to make you a better angler. Get out of your comfort zone.
When's the last best example for you on that? A great example where you went to a new body of water and had to learn new presentation, and you just feel like it really impacted, or you just really enjoyed it, maybe.
To me, some of the we can go to a bass world and talk about the Ned rig and how crazy that has been amazing. Amazing as far as downside, that net, it started with a wacky worm where you were using something that would look really dumb from traditional fishing, and a fish loved it. And then you kept nipping down, and you got this Ned rig. It looks like a 2-inch stick in the water. Yeah, yet under pressured fish, tough conditions, they love it. They absolutely, absolutely love it. Walleye fishing in the walleye world, personally, to me, I believe that the hair jig phenomena is still got a huge amount of growth. Huge amount hair jigging. There's a time and a place for the boot tails, the split tails, the molded, the many different plastic concoctions that we got. And the hair jig moves quicker than these things. You can do more with a reaction bite with it. And my experience with that hair jig in the last 6-8 years, it's shocking to me how when it is one of those baits in walleyes that when it is on, there's not a close second. There's not a close second. It is like magic when it's fine too. The other thing in walleye world that today, that power corking. Yeah, you know, where these fish are getting so, they're so spooky, so fast. You come over them now, you got two guys rigged with their corks weighted. As soon as they come over the fish, you're moving slow. One guy's running a boat, the other guy's sitting down looking at that flanger so you could spot lock right away. You come over, he says, there they are. You spot lock, they're 15 there, they're 20 feet away. You throw your 20 feet down. These fish are moving. You get down right away, there might be 6-8 fish in there. You get one bite, sometimes two bites right away, and those fish are gone. They're gone. And in before, when we didn't know that these fish are moving the way they're moving, you know, when 360 came on the scene, then, you know, you started to say, oh, wow, those fish are, we knew they moved, but we didn't know they moved that much, that often, that fast. And when you got forward-facing sonar and clear water and everything, they said these fish are moved. Nobody realized that they're moving as often, as far, as distant. And that's every kind of fish that swims. Somebody's body's of water. I believe that from my perspective, many of us have underestimated the population of fish in those lakes. And there's more of them than we ever realized. And this open water, forward-facing sonar phenomena has made me think maybe we have underguessed the population of fish dynamics, and there's way more fish than we think in the entire system, in the whole system, because we're just learning so much about it.
Oh yeah, I mean, if fishing is as good as it's ever been, you know, in those terms of, like, you know, we've got good participation, you know, in recent history. You know, COVID kind of helped, but, you know, the participation is kind of up. You know, you look at the fishing opportunity. Yeah, like, fishing is as good as it's ever been, in just in terms of the opportunity, you know, in the game and fish, you know, the state departments across the board, every, you know, fish stocking. I mean, there's more little ponds being turned into stock ponds than ever.
There's a lot of pluses. We got a lot of pluses.
Yeah, lots to be thankful
overall
for.
Overall, fishing is really, really, really good. Really. One thing we are doing, we're splitting a lot more. When there was small groups of us that were very skilled anglers, we got into this, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, you know, and the knowledge has spread. We have a lot more fish being split between a lot more people, you know, and that, but the populations are surprising to me how many fish are there. I'm reevaluating a lot of lakes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that I thought, man, there's more fish here than I realized.
Oh yeah. And destination fishing is as good as it's ever been. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, if you do live somewhere in a metro, or you live somewhere where you got to travel to fish or whatever, or you just, you know, you're just sick of fishing really pressured fish, and maybe it's just a hard thing to overcome. You know, that's a whole nother conversation, but destination fishing, fishing to go find some big dumb fish. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. But yeah, I mean, just to kind of slowly, you know, close this out. I mean, I'd love to talk to you for the next 4 hours, of course, but I mean, you know, I just love making the point of, you know, and hearing a lot of your history and all the stories from way back. I think it's important to sort of hear those stories and hear what was going on back then, and just some of the impactful, you know, things that sort of, you know, in the industry and the people and just some of those memories and realizing that there's always change. There's, you know, there's certain things that don't last, or, you know, like, or just the changing of the, you know, the lakes, the conditions, the clear water, just one good example, but just all the change that's out there. So, you know, things that we preached 20 years ago, you know, we preach different things now. That doesn't mean it was wrong back then. It doesn't mean that now we have this great awakening and that everything we did before was wrong. It's all relative, you know.
Correct, and though. That's the right word.
Some of these things withstand the test of time because it's more of a big picture of, you know, there's no replacing, you know, hard work and time on the water for so many people. No matter how it is that you learn or get good at build skills in your lifetime with fishing, the experience is just, it's so irreplaceable. And there's things you can do to curb that, you know, and speed it up. If you got to hire a guide sometimes to sort of get exposed to some good things, pay attention to the tournament world has taught me a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, or even jumping in a little derby, you know, if you're not necessarily going to be hoisting any trophies, derby fishing, if there's something local, it's such a learning environment. And all that stuff, I think, is really, really cool. It can kind of teach you to, you know, and help you build your skills. But identifying some of those fun things that withstand the test of time, but also just sort of respecting the fact that, you know, like these fish force you to change. These fish, when you put enough pressure on them, the boat pressure, the sonar pressure, the lure, you know, these community spots, these really popular lakes, that's a real conversation, a real popular conversation with a lot of anglers. You know, if you spend a lot of your time on a home body of water or whatever it is, like if you spend a lot of time on pressured fish, you really got to be with the times and pay attention to some of these, you know, flashy new young guns.
Like power corking or things like this, somebody's newer, more aggressive. The environment is changing. The fish are changing. They're adapting. This is always happening. It is always a cycle. It's the cycle of life for these fish. And there's always something new. There's something, well, this is new this year. There's always something new. There's always something bigger and better. And we don't know what it is right now, but there's people right now, as we're sitting here, that have the next major breakthrough. They have it. They're doing it. They're in the market for that next new big thing. It's in play right now in somebody's garage somewhere. It's happening right now. It's right now. It is happening. And if you keep following updated fishing publications, television shows, and things like that, that you see them in advance. Yeah, you know, and it keeps you tuned into, keeps you ahead of the game, so to speak. So you're at the front end of the trends when they're coming in, not 4 years after they've been through. It'll make you a better fisherman. It'll make you a better angler, more successful time on water.
For you, you've been in this industry a long time, lure development. You've done it all. You've seen it all. You know everybody. Everybody knows you. Like, do you spend much time in those quiet rooms having those discussions, trying to figure out what the next thing is, you know, in terms of developing or the patterns? Or
All the time. No, I do both. I do both. I've never got burned out on fishing, and I'm thankful for that. Many people in our business, some of them in the television show business, have been burned out over time. I've seen it happen. You can tell they don't enjoy it anymore. I can thankfully say I've not been, I love it. I absolutely love what I'm doing. It's a blessing to make a living in a fishing industry. They're the finest bunch of people in the world. It's a great lifestyle. Yeah, you know, it's got nothing to do with becoming rich and famous or anything like that. If you could make a living doing something you like, fishing and hunting in the outdoor, nothing beats it. And pay your bills and you want to support your lifestyle. It's a phenomenal way to do it. The fishing industry is phenomenal. I can't say enough about it. And there's more opportunity now than there has ever been overall.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Amen to that. Well, I mean, again, I could literally ask you 1,000 more questions along these same lines, but we kind of got to cut it off somewhere. I don't want to drag it on. I don't want to take too much of your time. I'm hoping that eventually I can, you know, steal another hour of your life and do another one of these. Cause yeah, I love that conversation around even the lures, getting specific on the lures that you like and why you like them, you know, the versatility of a hair jig. I just love that. And you know, some of this stuff, you know, I think it gets so hyper-focused on a certain thing, a certain cadence, a certain presentation. It gets popular for whatever reason, but it's not as versatile, or it's hard to duplicate for the average angler, and some of that stuff burns out. You put a hair jig on. If you can give somebody some of those subtleties and they can build a little confidence, it's just one of those things that's year-round. I think that contributes to, like, our conversation about why do some things last the test of time? Why do some things come and go? That versatility, I think, has to be a big part of that.
And keeping an open mind.
And bait modification, you know, there's like people that can look at a scenario objectively and say, you know, this thing over here was designed for this, or they sold it for this reason, but I wonder if it works in this situation. And then probably nobody else has ever done that before, or whatever it is, those fish haven't seen that bait, you know, for 6 months.
And that's what gives us a new, there's people that constantly think that way. They're always tweaking constantly. You see it in tournament circles. They're always trying to make something that's good a little bit better. What can I do with this to get one more fish at the end of the day? You know, and that's the kind of thinking. These are the kind of people that make these little breakthroughs.
Yeah.
And they're there. They're there. That which makes the sport so much fun.
Yeah. Oh yeah, man. Well, Al, I'm going to sign this one off, man. I really, really appreciate it. We covered the things I was hoping to cover and then some. I love the information. There's always so much to take away from it. Just, you know, my brain, all the little sensors are just firing right now. I'm going to have to go outside and play tackle for another couple hours.
And hey, won't it be fun?
It will be. That's another one that never gets old. Just sitting in a quiet basement with my own thoughts, just in 9 tackle boxes open, rods rigging. Ugh, love it. And especially on a day when it's like 9 degrees outside and I can't get the boat on the water without freezing to death. So anyways, all right, man. Well, Al, sign it off however you want. You know, if anything you want to promote, you know, the YouTube channels or anything like that. Most people are probably pretty familiar. But anyways, man, I'll let you go, man.
No, all I got to say is be safe out there. Have a great fishing season. And I'll see you on the water.
There it is, man. It's done.